is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
You can make something competitive, and I love like the thought of stacking wins day after day after day after day and stacking just individual wins, like win today. And that's a mindset, like win this choice.
Gabe Miller is in his sixth year as a men's basketball assistant coach at Loras College in Iowa. Miller came to Loras prior to the 2016 season after two seasons as the assistant coach at Judson University in Elgin, Illinois. Under head coach Chris Martin, Miller serves as the primary recruiting coordinator, as well as overseeing the strength and conditioning program. During his time with the Duhawks, Gabe has helped coach the team to the 2017 Iowa Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Championship and the NCAA Division III Sweet 16 in 2019. The Duhawks have also finished in the top three of the conference each of the past five seasons. As a college basketball player at Anderson University, Miller helped the Ravens to a conference championship and an appearance in the NCAA tournament. In addition, Miller was a two-time all-conference selection and ranks in the top 10 all-time in career assists and steals. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is JP Clark, former NBA assistant coach with the Celtics and Clippers, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly. Mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out quickcut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. Quickcut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's quickcut.com. Make sure you have a notebook ready as you listen to this episode with Gabe Miller, men's basketball assistant coach at Loras College in the state of Iowa. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by Gabe Miller, the associate men's basketball coach at Loras College. Gabe, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, hey, I appreciate you having me on tonight. Looking forward to it.
Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving in, learning more about you and your career. And I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got introduced to the game. What are some of your first experiences that you remember?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny to just sit here and think back and, you know, try to figure out the important people in my life or the important situations or whatever happened. You know, I grew up in Southern Indiana, and when you hear people who are from Indiana, they always, you know, see pictures of, you know, snowy driveways and shoveling things and getting shots up or whatever the case is. Like Indiana, like that's what you do, right? Like basketball was it. And I was fortunate enough to be raised by two awesome parents, and I'm one of five boys in a family. So I have three older brothers who basketball and sports, and that's how I was introduced to it. That's what it was. And I remember going to, you know, elementary games and high school games and junior high games and college games and sitting in the bleachers and watching my older brothers play. And, you know, right or wrong, that I was almost destined to play basketball, or basketball be a part of my life. And so that was a fun part of just growing up and getting beat on. And, you know, when we get together for the holidays, or when all of us, all of our brothers can get together, like we just tell stories and we're so competitive and we just rag on each other. And we talk about, you know, that one time I beat you 1-on-1, or that one time that, you know, one of my older brothers, I stole it from him out on the backcourt and he shoved me into the, you know, the pole and chipped my tooth. And like, those are the stories that we remember and we talk about. And like, yeah, it's all fun and games and everything, but there was a competitiveness to us growing up, and it was a lot of fun. And like I said, like, that's what we do in Indiana. And, you know, early on, that's what it was. And so getting introduced to basketball was pretty easy, safe to say, that's for sure.
Were you and your brothers right on the edge of crazy? Because I know I have friends that I grew up with that just about any family that has only boys and has more than two, it just seems like, man, those houses get crazy with people going super competitive, and just where you're almost right on the edge of, yeah, it's competitive. And then sometimes it flips over from being competitive to like, I'm really legitimately trying to like beat the tar out of you.
I mean, I think crazy is almost setting it lightly, right? I say this often. And when I tell people that I'm one of five, like my mom was a saint, and, you know, bless her heart. And she did some awesome things, and she put up with some crazy situations and some crazy stories. And, you know, if I had a dollar for every time I heard, just wait until your dad gets home, you know, that type of situation, of whether it was us fighting each other, or us, you know, telling on each other or punching the other guy or whatever the case was, like it was crazy then. And it's still crazy now with, you know, kids running around and babies now. And so it's cool to see full circle just what it's like and the competitiveness that can be drawn out of each other, for sure.
Your parents have any granddaughters yet?
They do. Yeah.
All right.
They
nice.
Do. Their first mom was a granddaughter. So,
all right. There you go.
They've got a handful. Yeah, I know my mom was loving that.
I bet your mom was happy. Sure. Yeah, for sure.
She was.
She could finally go to the store and buy some girls' clothes.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
All right. So you mentioned that you played other sports. Were you, at what point did you start to zero in on basketball, or were you a multi-sport athlete when you got to high school?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town. So I went to a small high school. So, you know, we didn't have football. So, you know, growing up, it was basketball. It was basketball and baseball. And then we all did tennis for the fun of it. And it was nice. More so, it's almost like you do tennis just to, you know, quote unquote, get in shape for the basketball season. And then after basketball, you flow right into the baseball season. So, you know, the growing up, the youth leagues of the basketball and baseball, those were the big things. And that's what it was. You know, a typical route for the year for kids, you know, that we would hang out with. And we knew that we were going to play summer baseball, and we knew right after summer baseball, we were going to go right into tennis. And then from tennis, we were going to go into the basketball season. So it was full circle, pretty scheduled out and everything. You know, I knew deep down, early on, I had the opportunity. One of my older brothers played college basketball at Franklin in Indiana. And I remember just growing up and going to his games and watching and traveling. And that was when I was like, I want to do this. I want to play college basketball. And that was one of the biggest impacts of my life, was watching him. And he had a successful career, and, you know, he set some high school records and was pretty successful at the college level as well. But I just remember, you know, traveling to the games with my family and with people from the town and just the excitement that that brought them. And that was the itch that like, yeah, I want to do this, you know, actually seeing college basketball and experiencing that as a kid and a few years out. That's where I really got the desire to continue moving on to play college ball.
How did that translate watching your brother, and I'm sure having conversations with him, how did that translate into what you did to work and improve and become a better player so that you might have the opportunity to play college basketball after your high school career was over?
Yeah, definitely. So it started my, you know, sixth and seventh grade years. You know, I was blessed, you know, fortunate enough to play on a team that we didn't lose a game my fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, or eighth grade year. So we were like 90-some-0 leading into my freshman year of high school. And my sixth grade year, I was actually the ball boy, the manager, whatever it is for the high school varsity team. So I traveled on the bus. I, you know, went to the practices. I did the water bottles. I did everything. And my older brother was a senior that year. And so they actually won a sectional championship for the first time in school history. So like, I was just involved and absorbed into that. And I get to see, you know, the type of work ethic. I remember him coming home from, you know, lifting as a senior in high school and drinking protein shakes and watching him do all this stuff. And like, then that was translating to a successful high school career. And then him, you know, committing to college and the habits that he was creating and that he was, you know, instilling that he didn't realize I was watching really paid off. And that, you know, looking back now, I'm like, yeah, like, early on, you know, and I'm a big habits guy and a big routine guy and just the impact that those can have on your life. Like that's a huge influence, right? Like you see that. And now as a father, you know, that plays a huge role into, you know, the types of conversations that I have with my kids or the impact that we can have on our guys now. Like, even though, you know, it might not be a direct conversation, what you're doing and what people see plays a huge role in it.
Absolutely. Growing up in small town Indiana, did you, I'm assuming, play with the same group of kids from the time you were little? You pretty much knew who your high school teammates were or would be?
Yep, exactly. So I knew, you know, we had a really good group of guys that played. AAU wasn't huge. It was just starting to take off a little bit when I got into high school. But from, you know, third, fourth, fifth, up until my freshman year where, you know, as a freshman, you can move up to like junior varsity or varsity or whatever the case is. Like we played together and, you know, we had one of our buddies' dads was the coach. And so that was pretty consistent. And yeah, maybe a kid moved in or moved out or whatever. But, you know, on senior night of our high school year, there's a group of, you know, five or six of us that had been together since our fifth grade year, which was really exciting. That's for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. What's your favorite memory when you think back to your high school playing career? Does one or two things stand out for you?
Yeah, there's, you know, kind of, I would say two things. So I was fortunate enough again. So my older brother who played college ball, he graduated. And then I have another older brother who's 2 years older than myself. So as a sophomore, I was starting as the point guard on the varsity team. And we had a pretty good season and we were playing in the semi-state game. And this is the farthest that, you know, our school had ever been. And we got beat in the semi-state on a last second tip-in and just the devastation that brought. because, yes, we just got beat and how close we were to reaching the state championship. But, you know, my brother was on the team as a senior and he was never going to play, you know, he wasn't going to play college ball or anything. But I just remember, you know, after that game, there's a picture of me, you know, kneeled over at the half court line, just sobbing. Like, yeah, we lost and that stung. But just the fact that I was never going to get to play basketball with him again, that was a big part of it. And then the following year, we had the opportunity and just things worked out. We were blessed. We won a state championship my junior year. And the morning of our state championship game, my older brother who graduated the year before wrote me a handwritten note on a post-it and put it in the bathroom before we left on the bus. And I just remember, and he's just like, you know, it said, Gabe, like, I'm so proud of you. This is awesome. Go win a state championship. And like, it meant more to win a state championship because of the experience that we had the year before of getting so close. You know, they talk about the taste of, you know, victory is so sweet when you can, you know, taste defeat a little bit, right? Like, that was a big part of the high school season and the experience of, yeah, the joy of not many people can win a state championship, and to win a state championship in Indiana, that's even a little bit more special, I'd say.
It's super interesting to me that the first thing you mentioned is the loss. Obviously, chronologically, it makes sense. Yeah. But I also think that when you have an opportunity to have been a successful player, and obviously you were at the high school level and the college level, you don't lose, you don't lose very often. And so those losses, I always say that I won a lot of games, but the losses are the ones that really stick with me. And if you ask me that same question, I have a couple of good moments, but I have a couple of losses that I rank those as, I don't know that they're my favorite memories, but when you ask me for what's my most vivid memory or what things do I think about most when it comes to my high school career, I definitely think about those losses. And I think it's always interesting to get that question of, do you love to win more or do you hate to lose? And I think it's not an easy question to answer, but I think when I think about my own memories and I think about the things that stick with me, you know, I put myself in the hate to lose category more than that, more than the love to win. And obviously you love to win, but man, those losses stick with you.
Exactly right. I think it was Kobe Bryant in one interview. They were kind of getting to that question, right? Do you, the love to win or hate to lose type of thing. And he's just like, what is failure? Like there's like failure's like that's all in your imagination, right? Like a loss is still an opportunity to learn. And that's a huge part. And I think that's why sports are so awesome and so different than anything else, because of the fact that they can teach individuals so much about life. And, you know, now coaching, right? You can lose a game and you can get mad and, you know, it's on your record forever, but like there's lessons to be learned, right? Like whether it was your game day prep, whether it was decision making, whether it was the conversation you had with the referee or the conversation you had with the player or whatever the case is, like there's so many lessons that you can learn, you know, and you can do that in wins too. Don't get me wrong, but you know, there's something about a loss that, you know, almost makes you just really evaluate a little bit more than what you might typically do.
And as much as a loss hurts, it's not like a loss necessarily in real life that can have, not that it doesn't have a real impact on your life, because as coaches and players, we know that those losses do have a real impact on your life, but you can bounce back from those. You lose game 12 of your season and your season's not over. You can come back and you get another opportunity to play. And those life lessons, I think, are really, really important. I'm curious, how old are your kids? Are they playing sports yet?
Our first, he's 3 years old, and then Fletcher is one.
So you're not there yet.
Not yet. Crew is really digging into basketball right now.
Cool.
We do a lot of imagination and games, and we've got our, you know, the hoop set up inside, and so it's fun. He's starting to really pick it up a little bit, but nothing's pushed, right? Like you just want him to enjoy it and just have fun with it.
I can preview it for you. It's gonna be fun, and it's gonna be challenging as you go through if they end up playing hoops, because I just found with my own kids, and this is a question that, or just something I've talked with other coaches about. It's interesting, you know, when we're talking about teaching life lessons and using the game and how much losing hurts and how much you enjoy winning. And, you know, it's funny, I'll be coaching my kids, and I have my daughter's a senior now, my son's a sophomore, and I have another daughter who's in sixth grade. And so I've coached them all on various levels and whatever. And as a coach, when we play a game and we lose, and I'm just, as you know, you get totally wrapped up in it, and you look back and what could we have done differently and this and that. And then as each of them have gotten up older, where I'm not coaching them, and then I'm sitting in the stands, and as a parent, I want them to do well, and I hope their team wins, and I hope they play well. But a minute after that game's over, like, I'm no longer invested in the result of the game. It's like I'm just happy for them. But as a coach, man, those things stick with you. So it's just interesting as you know, you got that parent versus that coach sort of perspective, depending on where you're at. And just, it's amazing how much easier it is to detach when I'm just a parent as opposed to I'm the coach of that team as well. So.
There you go. What's the any piece of advice on that as he gets older?
Yeah, I mean, I think
don't
the biggest
coach
thing,
him or coach
no,
him
no,
or
no,
what?
No. I think you definitely want to coach him.
Okay.
I think you definitely want to coach him, and here's why. I think what I always found is, and again, this goes to, I always wanted to coach him in basketball. I coached my son a little bit with baseball. I did it for a year or two, and then I got out simply because I didn't feel like I was adding a tremendous amount of baseball value.
Yeah.
And I also thought he needed to hear a different voice. But with basketball, and I'm sure you can speak to this to some degree, you know, you see there's all different types of coaching that a kid can be, you know, that a kid can get involved with. And with basketball, I felt like because I could bring some knowledge of the game, and then I also knew that I could create the kind of environment that I wanted him to be in from a basketball standpoint, I felt like that was important. So I always coached all my kids. I coached my, okay, my daughters, coached my son. And then I think the other piece of it that I've always, I don't know if struggled with, but I think I know that the way that I handled it was the right way to handle it, but yeah, it's really difficult. And what I mean by that is, as a basketball guy, I always felt like I want, and I was a kid that like I could never get enough. I was on my driveway all the time. By the time I was, you know, 13, I was hopping on my bike and riding down to the park and playing with, yeah, high school and college and adult guys. And then by the time I could drive or my friends could drive, we were driving all over the city to find games and doing this and that. And I was just a kid that, you know, I just loved it. And none of my three kids have been wired like that. So it was difficult, probably more difficult with my son than my daughter, just because, again, I probably relate to his experience more than I related to my daughter's sports experience. But with my kids, what I found to be the most challenging piece of it is how much do you push? And there are times where I'm going to the gym and part of me would want to be like, come on, man, you got to go. I'd always ask, but if he said no, I would kind of walk out of the house a little disgruntled. Yeah. But I always held my tongue and didn't make any of the kids go to something that they didn't want to go to. So sometimes they would go, but there were a lot of times that they didn't. And as a father and as somebody who was wired the way I was wired, that was really, really hard for me. And I would see other parents, other dads, and they'd kind of have their kid, they'd be dragging them around, or they'd have a kid who was more like me who wanted to go to all this stuff. And part of me is like, oh man, I wish my son was more like that, or I wish my daughter was more like that, that they wanted to just tag along to the gym every time I went, and they just weren't. And my son's now a sophomore, and at the end of his eighth grade year, all of a sudden that light went back on or came on for the first time. And he just started, hey, Dad, can you take me? Can we go shoot? Can we do this? Can you put together some workouts for me? Can we do? And it was just like he went from being completely one direction to completely going in the other direction. Wow. And it's just been a really interesting journey to see where, like, he was a kid who always played hard, always worked hard in practice, was super coachable, but just didn't have, and I tell people all the time, like, he just doesn't have, he's just not wired and driven to go and get better outside of the things that are, quote, required.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when he started doing that, and you start seeing the improvement, and you start seeing a little bit of that passion come in, and as a father, you kind of look at it and you're like, okay, I think I did it right. Because you wonder, if I'm dragging him to stuff when he's 8, 9, 10 years old, one, does he eventually hate the game? And two, does he eventually get sick of dad dragging him to all these places that he didn't want to go to? So it was really hard to not push. But I really feel like in the end, I made the best decision, because one, the relationship is solid. And two, as you know, if a kid's not going to work at it on their own, if they're only working at it because their coach tells them to, or because their dad tells them to, or their mom drags them somewhere, they're never going to be good enough to do anything anyway. It has to come from them. And so even though it was really difficult, I guess the advice that I'd give you and I'd give any parent is just provide as many opportunities for your kids to do whatever it is. And then eventually they're going to probably find whatever their passion is. And just like my family was a basketball family because of me. So they got a lot more exposure to basketball just because that's what I was doing all the time. And I'm sure it'll be the same for you. So the chances of them finding basketball and liking basketball are pretty high. But I think if you don't become that crazy overbearing parent who's making your kid do stuff, I think in the long run, you're better off. And again, I'm not 100% sure that's right.
No, yeah.
Maybe if I had dragged him to a bunch of stuff, maybe he might've got better sooner and that passion might've kicked on. So I don't know for sure that I'm right. But I feel like for where we are now, I feel like to some degree what I did was vindicated. So
nice, yeah. Yeah, I think you can go many different ways, and you know, whether it's like the Tiger Woods, you know, childhood story or that, or you know, whatever that is. Like there's so many different routes that you can go, and there's no right or wrong way, and it's your way.
Yep.
And you know, if that's what you feel is right, like do it. And you know, that, like you said, you got to it, like the intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation.
For sure.
And, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's what each individual is passionate about and what they want to do and where they find joy and, you know, where they can, you know, feel like they can be themselves. And I think that's the key to it.
And that's what parenting is. Forget about sports. I mean, we're all just flying by the seat of our pants. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You're just like, hey, I'm trying to do this right. I think I know what I'm doing. I think I'm making the right decision, but who knows? And you can't go back and create an alternative reality and do something different. So you just have to try to do the best you can. And that's all, that's all you can do. All right, let's get back to your playing career. You get an opportunity and have a successful high school career. You've always wanted to play college basketball. What's the recruitment like? What's your decision-making process for ending up at Anderson?
For sure, yeah. The, you know, again, I kind of mentioned a little bit ago, like, you know, AAU wasn't as big, and the recruiting, you know, recruiting scene was just starting to take off. You know, I ended up playing AAU, you know, really diving into the year after my junior year, and dug into it, and like, I remember going to AAU tournaments and like playing against some high level names and some, you know, big time coaches. And like, you know, as a small town kid, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? And to now know what it is now, you know, it's just crazy where it kind of started and where it's going to continue to grow. So, you know, going into my senior year, I was open. The recruiting process was, you know, was good, was fine. Coaches were, you know, calling and they would show up to see you play, and, you know, text messaging wasn't, you know, huge then, you know, it was more so phone calls and handwritten letters or whatever the case was. And then you go visit. And so just knowing what the recruiting is like now with, you know, FaceTime or, you know, text or calls or whatever to where it was then. And it's just funny to see it all and the growth of it. So, ended up, you know, had some opportunities to walk on at some scholarship schools or to play at the Division II level or whatever the case was. And that's kind of a key point in my life, is I had committed to a Division II school and was going up to some workouts over the summer and was doing some things and thought that was the path that I was wanting to go. And I had, you know, it was August of the year, and I'm getting ready to start school in probably 2 or 3 weeks, right? Like the classes were set, my schedule was set. I was doing some open gym runs with the team, and for whatever reason, I went up one day, and you know, I'm faith is a big part of my life, and there's not many other ways that I can tell this story without bringing that into it. But it was just a matter of faith that I just had a feeling that school was not where I was supposed to be. And I left the parking lot that day, didn't go play open gym, and went home and told my parents. And I said, hey, like, I'm not supposed to be, that's not the school that I'm supposed to go to. I'm supposed to go to Anderson University for whatever reason. Like, I had no idea. Anderson had recruited me. Yes. I had told them probably 3 months ago that I wasn't interested. And I was 17, 18 years old, and I thought it was a lot better than what I was. And, you know, Division III was below me, quote unquote. That was my thought. And, you know, during the recruiting process, and I just, you know, I had it in my mind, I wanted to play at the highest level for whatever reason. And, but, you know, that turned out to be wrong. And so made a phone call that afternoon and called the head coach at Anderson, Coach Slider, and I told him the situation. And he was lucky enough, or I was lucky enough and fortunate enough that he made some phone calls to the school, and I was able to go up for orientation and get my class schedule in about a week and moved in 2 days later. And, you know, looking back now, it's just crazy because my wife now was a senior at Anderson my freshman year. So it's just funny how it all works out. Like, there was a reason for it, right? Like, who knows where life could be? And, you know, life is like that. And, you know, the decisions that you make impact who you are and the path that you're going to be on. And, you know, fortunate enough to have, you know, some strong influence, influential voices in my life that were able to direct me during that. And so ended up at Anderson. That's kind of a long story short, but that's the path that I was able to take. And, you know, the 4 years at Anderson shaped me for who I am and who, you know, the type of person that I want to become. Those were four key years of my life. That's for sure.
Did you know right away when you were there and you got involved in the team with the team and you're going to class, did you know right away that the decision obviously to leave the previous school was the right one, but did you know right away that Anderson, you're like, oh yeah, this is the right fit for me?
I did. Yeah, for sure. It just felt right. Like, I knew deep down that was the staff that I wanted to play for. It's just funny, you know, again, the thinking back to, you know, when I was a sixth, seventh grader and watching my brother play college ball, like I wanted to play, you know, college basketball for that experience of like to make my family proud and make, you know, the town proud and everything. And, you know, that was the driving force early on in my career. And, you know, I think that's important. I do. I think family is super important. But until you know, truly find your purpose as an individual, like that was the shift for me. And that happened later on in my career at Anderson, was like, I'm going to do this for me. Like, I want to be successful. I want to find who I am as an individual and, you know, take that route versus trying to please others. And I think, you know, comparison's the thief of joy. And I think that's a quote that is written on my wall and something that I live by, is like that can take a lot out of you. Like when you're trying to compare your situation to others, like there's no good inroad to that. And so it didn't matter what others were saying or whatever the route was, or, you know, oh, you're doing this or you're doing that. Like if you can shut out those voices, I think that's a huge driving point for your life, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I think that's another parenting mantra that I use all the time with my kids. And you use it and you try to talk about it. And if you're ever in situations where you see people who are comparers, mm-hmm. and anybody in my life that I know that's a comparer is never a happy person.
Yeah.
Because even when they have good things that happen to them, there's always somebody else that has something better happen to them.
Yeah.
And I just think that, man, if you can use that not only with your players, with yourself, but man, as a parent, if you can instill that ability to just be happy with what you have and to have a drive to achieve for yourself, not so you can one up somebody else, I think you just have an opportunity to be a lot happier in your life than if you're always looking over your shoulder. Right. Let's face it. Look, today, right, compared to when you were playing or when I was playing, you think about social media and what kids that are growing up today, what they have to compare themselves to. Used to be like, again, who'd you compare to yourself to in high school? Maybe a kid across the, you know, 20 miles away was maybe as far as you had to go to be the best player, and you didn't know any better otherwise. Now you're a kid in Southern Indiana. I mean, you know what some kid in California is doing and what offer they have. And I can't even imagine what kids today have to go through with all the highlight videos that are out there and all the posts about got this offer and got that offer, and just, you know, the pressure that you feel and your friends saying, hey, well, when are you going to get your offer and this and that? And I can't even imagine what that's like.
That's right. I remember in high school, you know, you play on a Friday night. I remember waking up Saturday morning and walking up our driveway and getting the newspaper to check the scores of the teams, you know, 20 minutes away to see if they won.
Yep.
And like I had no idea some of the names in the box scores, but you know, just that, that's just funny. Like, it's just how different it is. That's for sure. And that's, and it's not right or wrong. It's,
correct.
It's what we have. Yep. Correct. Right. Right.
Absolutely. But,
yeah, that's funny.
All right. So when did coaching get on your radar? What would you study in school? What did you plan to do? Was it always coaching? Was it always staying involved in the game, or did coaching not become a thought until after your playing career ends?
Yeah. So I went into college wanting to be a teacher, and I wanted to be a English teacher, and I wanted to be a high school coach, or that's what I thought I wanted to do. I think the teaching aspect was more so just so I could coach, because that's kind of what I had always been told.
Right.
And then it was in between my sophomore and junior season of college that it kind of all flipped for me. And that was when I was like, why am I doing this? And I actually told our head coach that I thought I was going to quit and I didn't want to play basketball anymore. And then finally, I don't know exactly what happened or what it was, but the light bulb turned on and I was like, no, like if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to play college basketball, I need to commit 100%. So I changed my major to exercise science, and I learned how to eat right. I learned how to work out. I learned just the whole scope of, you know, maximizing your ability, the science behind it. Like, you know, you could read everything in magazines and whatnot, but I wanted to teach myself and wanted to learn and wanted to dig into it and find out, okay, I need to be eating this 2 days before our game. I need to be eating this a day before our game, or I need to be taking this before a workout or whatever the case is. And that's when, you know, things really shifted in my life, was like, this is what I want to do, right? Like, if you want to be great at anything,
yep,
you know, if you look at the greats, and I'm a big reader, and I love, you know, looking at like the, you know, Kobe Bryant, and even, I'm not a huge LeBron guy, but like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs and those types of individuals, right? Like, they have such a limited hobby list. Like, they are so narrow focused into what they want to do and what they want to achieve, right? Like, if you have, you know, 20 buckets and you're trying to put, you know, 100 things in those 20 buckets, and it's so spread out, like, you're not going to be, you know, good at anything. But if you have three buckets, right, and you can have, you know, 25 things here and 30 things here, and like really, you know, go into those three things or whatever that is, that's where you can achieve success at the highest level. And that's what I started to learn. Like, okay, I don't need to be doing this. Everybody else can do that. I'm going to do these two or three things. And, you know, from eating right to working out to, you know, extra shots, or, you know, digging into my faith, or, you know, just the narrow-minded focus, I think was a huge shift for me. Got me into, you know, the physical training, the sport-specific training, and how to, you know, become a better basketball player. And that's where my true love of basketball really took off. You know, growing up, yes, basketball was always a part of my life, but up until that point, I think it was all for the, I don't want to say wrong reasons, but it was just what I did. And now it shifted to who I am. And that was the turning point for me. And then, you know, graduating, basketball had been such a part of my life that, you know, I almost pushed it away. Right. Like,
yeah.
You know, I graduated and we had some successful seasons at Anderson, and we, you know, went to the national tournament, won the conference championship and everything. And it was awesome. Right. It was great. Played 4 years and, have some awesome relationships. And, you know, the coaching staff is, you know, three or four of the strongest mentors of my life currently, and still some awesome people that I talk to, you know, every other day. You know, it's what you do and, or it's why you do it, is the turning point, that allowed me to become, yeah, I want to be a coach. Right. And, you know, I think my wife was able to speak into that and be like, no, don't push this away. Like, this is who you are. And this is the type of person that you are. And it's funny because I got into college wanting to be a teacher. Right. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of like the word coach and everything. I think, you know, I think we can teach more, life lessons that we can teach more off the court in this profession that is deemed, you know, coaching. And I think that's a huge part for it. So,
yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It's funny just hearing you talk about, you know, learning and then sort of shifting the way that you went about doing things. And so when you think about that, before we dive into how you took your first step into coaching, I just want to circle back to just, you talked earlier too about how, you know, you're a big believer in habits. So when you changed what you did, like just take your diet, for example. So when you said, hey, I changed my diet, like what were you doing before? You're eating like a typical college kid, like you're probably, so I just, for me, we used to practice when I was at Kent. So I was there from 88 to 92. And we would have, in the preseason, we would have these Saturday morning, like blue and gold games. So inter squad game, you know, be statted and filmed or whatever. And the coaches would do it. So it'd be like 3 hours, get up at 7 a.m. So we'd be done at like 10. And then me and a bunch of my teammates, we would go directly from that practice to the local Ponderosa. And we would just literally sit in Ponderosa for like 3 hours, and you're eating chicken wings and steak. I probably drank like a gallon and a half of soda and all this stuff. Yeah. And you just think back to that. And I'm like, man, like, first of all, how dumb was it? Yeah. Secondly, at that point, it was like, we didn't really even know better. Like my coach, when we played, we were still eating, we would eat steak dinners for our pregame. Which and like I was a kid who, for whatever reason, like the only thing I couldn't play on was pizza. Like you could feed me anything else and I felt fine. It was normal. But now I look back on it and I'm like, man, if I would have – and I was the kind of kid who, if you'd have told me, I probably would have changed. But nobody ever said to me like, hey, you probably don't want to drink a gallon and a half of pop after you play, you know, after you have a practice. And I was a kid who could – you know, run and just, you know, I was playing all the time, whenever I'm 20 years old, and you can do whatever you want, but it's just interesting. So what'd you change? Yeah. I'm just curious about how you went about making those changes.
I remember sitting in my dorm room my freshman year, and we'd go to Sam's Club, and Sam's Club would have 36 packs of Mountain Dew. And I'd buy 3 or 4 of those things. And I mean, I would drink those in 3 to 4 days. And talking to our guys now about it and drinking soda or not drinking soda or whatever, like, and you didn't even think twice about it, right? Like
no,
going to Ponderosa,
you
didn't think twice about it, or steak before games or whatever the case is. Like, you know, those were the things, and fast food and, you know, eating McDonald's or whatever the case was, like just not having any idea what the fuel was that you put into your body, right? Like it was just, this tastes good, so I'm going to eat it, or this is, you know, giving me energy or whatever the case is. And now knowing the science behind it, like, yeah, there's a reason that fast food does taste good, because you know, that's how they make money, and it tastes good so that you keep coming back and whatever. So, you know, when I made the shift and changed my major and everything and decided to, you know, go all in, like, I dropped my, I was living off campus, so that helped as well, but dropped my meal plan and told my family, told my parents, and I was blessed to have this situation. But like, I wanted, you know, and maybe it's the most healthy food, I don't know, but I just want gift cards to Subway. And again, I'm a creature of habit and I'm weird and that's okay and whatever, but I ate the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the 2 years of my college. And maybe, nice. Maybe we'd go out, you know, for dinner one night or whatever, but the Subway ladies knew my name because I would go every day at noon and get a sandwich. And then I would cook chicken and rice and vegetables for dinner. I'd eat a bowl of protein cereal at night. And that's what I did every single day. And I did that in the summer. I did that in the fall, in the winter. I ate the same meal. We played on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So I ate the same dinner on Tuesday nights and Friday nights. I'd go to Fazoli's and they'd have this because pasta gives you energy, right?
Right.
That's what I thought. That was the healthy way, whatever. But I'd eat one of their chicken sandwiches with a side of pasta every night before a game, and ate the same lunch. And I did that for 2 years. So
do you still have any of those tendencies now?
Yeah, I do. I do. I'm a weirdo for sure when it comes to that type of thing.
What's your go-to? I have, and again, I'm not quite as healthy as you, but for a long time, for basically probably since don't know, this is probably since high school, my lunch and breakfast, and I'm a little bit more flexible now than I used to be, but my lunch and breakfast have been the same. So I eat a bowl of Cheerios with All Bran, two or three, but depending on how hungry I am, might be one bowl, it might be three, with raisins on it and a banana and a glass of orange juice. That's my breakfast. And then my lunch is two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, raisins, and a banana. And so if I have the opportunity, that's my routine. And so everybody, it's funny, you know, I work and obviously I'm a teacher, and the people, you know, I'd sit in the cafe, sit in the teacher's lounge. People, you know, it took them a while, but after a couple of years, they're like, don't you ever eat anything else? Like, how can you eat peanut butter and jelly? My wife, who used to like peanut butter and jelly, now hates it because she's like, I can't look at you eating. You know, we've been married like 20 years. She's like, I can't look at you eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich again. It's just, I'll never eat one again. So
I'm telling you, it takes, and before I get into that and the details of it, like, and this, I really dug into it for people like Steve Jobs and learning things about what they do, picking out the outfit, right?
Yeah. Just take it off your plate.
It's something he doesn't have to think about.
For sure.
And if you can, you know, James Clear in his book, Atomic Habits, is one of my favorite and life-changing books if you've never read it.
Great book.
But habits are so key. And if you can develop habits and just, you know, the healthy habits where it just happens automatically and you don't have to think about it, like it frees up so much mind space that allows you to worry or focus on something else, right?
Yeah.
For me, I intermittent fast. So I don't eat until noon. I eat from noon to 8 p.m. And that's my time frame of eating. And so when I wake up, I allow myself to drink as much coffee as I want from, you know, 4:30 or 5 a.m. to noon. And I can drink as much coffee as I want. It's all black coffee. That doesn't, quote unquote, break a fast.
Right.
So I probably drink way too much coffee, but, and my wife and everybody makes fun of me and whatever, but I know
you gotta have one vice. Come on.
I know the first 1500 calories that I put in my body every single day. Whether we're traveling, whether we're, you know, on a road game or whatever the case is, or it's a Sunday and we're off, or it's Tuesday and, you know, it's something else is going on. So I know the smoothie that I make, I know exactly the what's in it, the nutrition breakdown. I know the bagel with peanut butter that I eat. I know the energy balls that I have at 2:30. So it's really weird. Like, people, you know, give me so much crap about it and whatever. I don't care. It's good to be weird.
That's how I feel too, man.
I don't care at all. I know exactly what's in my body. I know the breakdown of it. I know I'm going to feel good when I eat it, and I know I'm going to like it. And I've been doing that, for the last, 3 years or so, three, 4 years. So,
you've taken my weirdness to a whole nother level, man. I'm impressed.
Maybe, on Christmas morning, maybe I break it and I eat, you know, coffee cake or something with the family, it's pretty consistent. And it really comes back to, mindset. It's a competition that I have with myself. And, you know, if you can make something competitive, and, you know, I love like the thought of stacking wins day after day after day after day, and stacking, you know, just individual wins, like win today. And that's a mindset, like win this choice, and everything is a choice. And the choice to wake up early or the choice to, you know, sleep in is a daily thing. And the choice to make this, you know, protein shake, or the choice to, you know, eat this fast food sandwich. Like, I know what the right choice is. Now it's okay, have the discipline to do that right choice. And that's a key part, that, you know, you want to instill good habits into your players, right? Like, that's what we want as coaches. Well, you gain a little bit more traction with them when your actions and your words match up. Yeah. You know, maybe I'm not, you know, lacing up the shoes on Wednesday and Saturday nights to play. But, you know, I tell them they need to, or we say, hey, let's get extra shots up, or hey, your individual workouts, you know, on Tuesday, Thursdays. Well, you know, they're putting in the extra work. Well, they need to see us as a staff putting in the work too. So we need to be living a healthy lifestyle. We need to be working out. We need to be trying to get better, not just watching the film, but, you know, those actions need to match up with what we're asking of them as well. And I think that's key to it. And, you know, just the choice of what you eat every single day, or, you know, whether it's healthy or not healthy. Like, I think that matters. And that's a personal choice. And, you know, right or wrong, I think that does.
That self-competition, or almost that gamification of your life, I can totally relate to that. And I think if that's something that you could instill as a coach, if you could instill that in your players,
yeah,
to me, I feel like that's a trait that any player could benefit from, because then you're looking at, you can look at so many things as, I'm competing against myself. And what did I do yesterday? Can I match that? Can I do even better? What's my long-term goal? Can I get to 50,000 shots this summer? Whatever it is, if you can gamify it, to me, that's something that I've always done from the time I was a kid. And I do think that there's a tremendous amount of value in that. If you can put that into your players, if you could somehow instill that in them and show them through just being by the way that you are, just do it by example, or actually talking them through it. And if they really take it to heart, I think you could see a lot of benefit to that, for sure.
There's a quote that I love, and I heard this a few years back from some pretty influential people in my life. And it was, when you know who you are, you don't have to worry anymore.
It's true.
I think that's so true, right? It takes all, you know, any voices from social media or people saying you're doing this wrong or you should be doing it this way. No, I know who I am, and I am good with that. So whether you agree with, you know, the way that I work out or the way that I start my day, or, and I'm not saying you, I'm just
using
that as a, you know, example, right? Or whether you think I should be eating this or whatever, when I know who I am and I'm confident in that, and I know that there's a foundation to that, I don't have to worry about that. And, you know, in today's society, in today's world, there's so many voices that guys are hearing. I know we talked about that a little bit earlier. They're being drawn in so many different ways. They need to have a solid foundation that they can fall back into. It's like a boxing ring, and the boxing ring, you know, there's ropes around the ring, and that's from a book that I've read before that talks about your values and who you are those ropes, and life is going to throw you against those ropes. And are your ropes strong enough to, you know, they're going to give a little bit, but eventually you're going to get pushed back into the middle of the ring. And that's a great visual for myself and for that we use with our guys, and that I've talked to, you know, starting to talk with my kids about now is what are those ropes that surround your boxing ring? And you got to be able to get back into the middle of the ring to be able to, you know, figure out what the next punch is that you need to throw, or you need to adjust, or whatever the case is. So, you know, I think that comes back to what choices you're making and what your habits are on a daily basis.
Absolutely. If you can instill, and I'm thinking about this as much from a parent standpoint as I'm a coaching standpoint, but if you could instill in your kids that confidence to be who I am, especially when you think about the peer pressure and the things that kids are exposed to, whether you just think about drinking or you think about drugs, or now you think about the trouble they can get into on a phone. If you can instill in your kids that, hey, who are you and what do you stand for and what are you all about? And then you can allow yourself to float around in those circles and still understand that that's not me. I can be exposed to these things. I could be at a party and people could be drinking, but I know that that's not something that I'm going to do. And I have the confidence to stand there and have 20 people come up to me and say, hey, you want a beer? You want a drink? And you can just say no. And that's not easy. That's not an easy level of confidence to have yourself or to instill in your kids as a parent. But I think to your point, those are conversations that I think anybody who's a leader, whether you're a leader as a parent or you're a leader as a coach, that's the type of player or kid that you want to be able to develop, is one who knows who they are. And therefore, as you said, they're not having to make a decision about should I do this or shouldn't. I already know who I am, and I'm not going to do those things, or I am going to do those things when you talk about positive habits. So
yeah, that's right.
Those are all great points.
Yeah, for sure. That's good.
All right. Let's jump into your first coaching job. How does it come to pass? What happens? How do you break into the coaching profession?
Yeah, no doubt. That's a great question. So graduated college in May and got married in June. And so 2 weeks, bang, bang. And got, like,
you're ready to be an adult. You go from a student to an adult.
I was blessed. My wife is awesome. And I'm the luckiest there out there. But so got married and, you know, I got a job and I used my degree to become like a sports trainer, specific, you know, speed, agility. So I was able to do that for 6 months and then got, you know, another real job and was like a athletic director at a youth sports organization. So I did that for 2.5 years out of college. And what I learned in that situation of how to talk to parents and how to schedule and how to run a budget. And it's really cool to look back and see, okay, why did we do that? And it's just how it all lines up and the opportunities that job presented itself. I thought that's what I was going to do, you know, the rest of my life. I had wanted to get away from basketball, like we had talked about, push it aside a little bit. And then my wife kept telling me, like, you're a coach, like you need to get into coaching. You need to get into coaching. And got a phone call one day, and this goes back to just how it all lines back up from making the college decision and the relationships that you build. I got a call from Joel Cotton. He was the head coach at Judson University in Elgin, just outside of Chicago. And Coach Cotton was the assistant coach at Anderson, who recruited me out of high school. So the fact that I made the decision to even go to Anderson in the first place, coach was there for 2 seasons and then he left and they moved to Chicago. It's just crazy how it all comes full circle. So he called me and he said he had a GA. Judson's an NAIA school, small Christian school, 800, 900 students. He had a GA assistant coach position and wanted to know if I'd be interested. And I'm like, yeah, like I would. Like, this would be awesome. And he's like, hey, he's like, come up. It's like, bring Erica, your wife up. Let's talk about it. Visit the school, visit the campus. Let's do this thing. So went up there and had an awesome experience, you know, talking to him, just reconnecting. He's one of the biggest mentors of my life now. But so he was the head coach, athletic director. The other assistant coach who was leaving, Jordan Delks, was there. And he was also a former player at Anderson, so I knew him. So it was really cool to reconnect with those guys. But they showed us around, they talked, and we're getting ready to leave. And coach is telling me, you know, what the position breakdown is. And he says, you know, it's a 2-year agreement, and this is what it's going to look like, and this is what it's going to pay. And he told us that dollar amount, and that dollar amount didn't line up with, when you look at rent and what it costs to live in the Chicagoland area, it just didn't make sense. So we got in the car, drove home, drove the 5 hours back home and prayed about it and talked about it and just was like, if this is what we need to do, this is what we need to do. And it was within, you know, 2-3 hours of just talking and praying and everything that we were like, yeah, like this is it. This is what we need to do. It's going to work out. I don't know how, but this is what our next calling as a family and for myself selfishly needs to be. So we made the decision to move up, and it was, you know, the 2.5 most influential years of my life now, and moving away from family. And it was, you know, it was awesome. And it was a school with not a lot of resources. It was a school with not a lot of, you know, recognition. And, you know, I had to get a CDL to drive the bus, you know, to games. And it's crazy what it all entailed. But the opportunity that it presented to learn and dig into it. And that was something that Coach Cotton talked about, is like, you're going to get to do scouting reports. You're going to get to do individual workouts. You're going to get to see a budget. You're going to get to be, you know, on the road. You're going to get to do everything. And that was the break into coaching. You know, I think, you know, you can go 2 different ways almost. You can either, you know, go to a big school and be a manager, right? And get into coaching that way. and then try to move up and get a GA position or whatever the case is. Or, you know, a lot of times if you're a former player, you know, and you want to get into coaching at the Division III or NAI or even Division II level, and then try to work up. And that was the route that I took because of the opportunity to play in college. And I wouldn't change it because I got to dabble in everything. I got to dabble, and I'm still getting to. And that's still the perk at this level is like we get to do, you know, travel. I get to do, you know, meals. I get to do, you know, individual workouts, the strength and conditioning, the academic grade checks. You get to do so much and you just learn so much and you just have a ton of opportunity to build relationships with the staff and the other coaches and your managers and things, but just the guys as well. And you get to, you know, check in on their grades, but you also then get to go, you know, spot them on the bench press. And then you get to go, you know, put them through an individual workout. And then you get to go, you know, talk to them during study tables. And so that was the break and the opportunity to get into coaching, you know, back in 2015.
So first question is, how did you make that work with the, I'll just use the word meager. We don't have to throw a dollar amount on it. How did you make it work with, how did you make that work with you and your wife? How did you pull that off financially? I'm always interested in the stories of how you pull that off.
Yeah, I was working three jobs, doing some early morning CrossFit training at a gym that I was able to get into and develop some good relationships with. Was doing was teaching 5, 6, 7 a.m. classes, going to the office after that, and then in the evenings, you know, had the opportunity to do some training with some kids.
Okay.
So some individual basketball workouts. So we were just, you know, trying to figure out what
figuring
to do,
it out,
how
right?
to do
figuring
it,
and, out day to day, right?
And when you have relationships with really, really good people, I'll be, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be right not to say that, you know, Coach Cotton and just the impact that not just himself and his family had on us during those 2.5 years, like we wouldn't be here today without them. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, the people in your life shape who you are. And, you know, the impact that he had on my life is crazy to think about. And knowing that he came to a game in high school, and I remember seeing him the first time, and I'm like, I don't want to go to this school. To who he is now in my life,
right?
And just the impact that he had. It's just, you just laugh, right? Like you just laugh and be like, this doesn't make sense, but that's just the beauty of life and what it all entails. And, so just, you scrap by, you figure out ways to, you know, you get creative with your budget and you get creative with different jobs and different opportunities. And, you know, you know exactly the food that you're eating and you're creating those habits and you're doing those things. And, I mean, that was the biggest thing is, just making the necessary choices and the necessary, I don't like the word sacrifice, but those decisions that you have to make to be like, yeah, like, this is what we want to do. So let's do it. Whatever it takes, let's just get it done and have that mindset each and every day.
What'd you love about coaching right away? Like what immediately, obviously you hadn't coached before, so you jump into it. What piece of it did stood out for you in that first year where you're like, man, this is really what I want to do?
Specific to that program, I think that really got my itch was the practices were so competitive. We did things with, you know, no out of bounds and, you know, guys just pushing and shoving and going crazy and guys diving on balls and shoving each other in a competitive way, though. Like it was drawn out of them in a positive way to push each other and to just the energy that brought. Like, you know, I remember college practices were maybe a little bit different, you know, 5 years ago when I was playing to what it looked like there. I was like, yeah, like this is it. I think when you're competitive, you're competitive, you know, the rest of your life. I don't think you can turn that switch off. And being out of basketball for, you know, those 3 years after graduating and then getting back into it, it was, yeah, like I want to be competitive. I want to, you know, lace them up and I want to jump into this, you know, practice, or I want to be competitive on the recruiting trail, or I want to be competitive, you know, in this workout or that workout, and just the opportunity to do that and to see that, but then to dive into those guys. And, you know, I remember, you know, 9 p.m. study tables and talking to them and having the, you know, conversations with those guys that, you know, I got phone calls from them, you know, from some guys on the team at Judson a couple of weeks ago, and just talking to them and hearing the stories. And, you know, that's what it all, that makes it all worth it.
Absolutely. I think those relationships, and I've often said that those calls that you get from former players and you pick up the phone, they're like, hey, coach, I don't think there's anything much more meaningful than that when you think about being able to use the game of basketball to make an impact on people's lives. And we all love the game and the opportunity that we have to use a game that has been so good to us to be able to have an impact on young people, I think is probably the most valuable thing that any of us could do as coaches. And it's one of the most rewarding things. Those phone calls are awesome.
For sure.
They're awesome.
Yep.
All right. So after you're there, you're 2.5 years at Judson. Explain how you get to Loras. How do you get hooked up with Chris? And you've obviously been there now for what? This is your sixth year?
Yep. We're in year six now.
So, go ahead. Tell the story.
So, year two at Judson, in between year one and year two, another way to one, make money and, you know, quote unquote network. And I'm not a huge fan of that word either, but to network and just build relationships and to grow as a coach, had the opportunity to coach AAU and got into AAU. And like, that was my first real vision of what AAU was turning into. And, so was coaching with a program out of Wheaton, Illinois, and diving into that and got just connected with that family and those individuals. And at that time, you know, at that April, May, June timeframe, the position, the head coach at Loras opened up and got filled. And Coach Martin and I had some common connections. We knew each other. We now knowing who he is and the people that he knows and the recruits that he had. It's just funny. Like, we never had a conversation before then. It's just funny how we didn't.
right.
But so just he was recruiting a player after he got the job at Loras. He was recruiting the son of the program director and had the opportunity. They threw my name out there and to him, and by the grace of God and just goodwill, I don't know why he gave me a phone call, and I don't know what I said, or maybe the other guy screwed it up. I don't know, but came up on an interview with him and his energy and passion. And I just remember leaving the interview and leaving the conversation and calling my wife and being like, that dude gets it. Like, that guy is passionate. That guy's energetic. He's crazy, but he has a vision. He knows what he wants. And if there's just a brief moment that he's even thinking about offering it to me in a conversation the next time, I'm not going to let him even think twice, and I'm going to take it. And that was a turning point. And I'm grateful to this day for that and what that opportunity presented itself.
When you think about the time that you've been with Chris, what are some things that you take away that, one, you think have led to the success that you guys have been able to have, and then two, to go along with that, what are some things that, if at some point you were to get an opportunity to be a head coach, some things that you've taken from him that you will take with you for the rest of your coaching career? What leads to your success, and then what do you think you're going to take with you if you ever get an opportunity to have your own program?
For sure. I think any assistant, like, you need to learn as much, right? Like, you need to, be able to suggest, you need to be able to, add some value. You need to be able to take the workload off your head coach as much as possible. And you need to add value to the program, but you also need to sit back and you need to learn as well. Like, he's in that chair for a reason. He has put the time in, he has earned that position. And Coach Martin is, I've said this before and I say this quite often, and he is one of the greatest leaders I have ever seen. And it's done, you know, maybe differently than what people see or what people think or whatever the case is, but he is able to build a relationship. He's able to get you to buy in. He's able to hold you accountable. He's able to motivate you. He's able to, you know, tip you over, but he's able to pull you back up. And he can do that with, you know, the best player on our team and the worst player on our team. And I think that, you know, is definition of a great leader. If you can do all those, you know, sometimes a head coach can, you know, be a motivator, and but he can't, you know, have a good relationship. Well, sometimes you can have a good relationship, but you can't be a motivator. And sometimes you're too much of a friend, and sometimes you're too crazy, or whatever the case is. Coach does an awesome job of blending those two things. And that's such an awesome thing to see day in and day out, the way that he communicates. And I'm blessed that to be alongside of him and to, you know, help him out however I can. But those are some things that, you know, he probably doesn't know that he's teaching me or that he's doing, but those are some of the strongest traits that I think a leader can possess, whether you're a coach or whether you're a Fortune 500 company owner or you're, you know, the CEO of this business or you're a dad or whatever the case is. If you can find different ways to motivate, to inspire, to build a relationship, to hold the person accountable, I think that encompasses everything that you could see and you could do. And I think that's key. And those are some of the strongest things that he can do.
Do you guys have conversations? Do you ask him about, hey, how do you do that? How do you motivate? How do you become a leader? Are those conversations that you guys are having together about how that's done? Or is it more something of you're watching, you're observing, you're trying to pick up the cues of things that he's doing and seeing? I'm just curious as to how you approach that. And obviously there's probably a little bit of both in there, but just, I'm just curious about how that relationship, when you guys are sitting in the coach's office, what do those conversations look like in terms of you learning from him and those types of conversations?
For sure. I think it's more so an organic conversation than it is, hey coach, how do you hold this guy accountable? Or what do you think here? Whatever the case is, like, I think it's more organic. It's he is such a driven and passionate, and he wants to win, you know, at all costs, right? Like to an extent. Don't get me wrong on that, but like he wants to do that and be, you know, one of the most successful programs. Like we say it all the time. We want to run a Division I program at the Division III level, and we want our end goal is to win a national championship. Like that's what we say. But we also realize as coaches, there's a lot more into that. Like we just talked about getting phone calls from former players and, you know, having a Snapchat group of former players or having, you know, text messages from former players. Like that's all in alignment. And I think if you can narrow down your focus and you can eliminate the noise from the outside, and coach does a good job of this, of like, what's important, you know, what are the five most important things in my life? And to see him, you know, take 30 minutes and, you know, have his kids come and eat lunch with him, or, you know, after a game, the kids are running on the floor or whatever the case is, but also seeing him at practice, you know, holding a guy accountable because he didn't close out with the right hand or whatever the case is. Like I get to see that as examples right in front of my eyes. And that's I think more valuable, because those are the words and his actions matching up to what he wants to be and the type of coach that he wants to be and the type of father that he wants to be. And then, you know, that can then lead into conversation in the office of like, hey, you know, what was going through your mind when you said this to him? Or, you know, maybe he says, hey, Gabe, how would you handle this situation? Or what are your thoughts on this type of guy? Or what should we say to him? Or how can we motivate this guy? Because, you know, the 15 guys on our team or however many that is, each guy's going to be motivated differently. And some guys need, you know, yelled at, and some guys need to be coddled a little bit. And you have to be able to know who they are, but also, you know, almost throw darts at them, and not you know, more symbolic than anything, but like, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try this one. And eventually, hopefully, that dart sticks. And you learn the darts by by learning, by talking, by reading, by listening to others. And, you know, I think that's something that he does really well is also is, you know, he's digging into books, he's digging into podcasts, he's, you know, applying things that he's learning and saying, hey, let's try this drill, or let's do this, or let's do this leadership book, or this, let's do this, whatever the case is. You know, just seeing the example that he sets, I think is more organic than just, you know, sitting down and saying, hey, coach, how'd you hold this guy accountable? Or what were you thinking here?
Right. You see situations that occur, and then you're having conversations and you're talking it through. Yeah. And in the course of doing that, that's how you're picking up. And I'm sure, just like you're learning from him, I'm sure he's learned from you in terms of just having those ideas be able to bounce back and forth off of each other. To me, I think those are always valuable conversations. I used to love, that's probably one of the things I miss most about not coaching a team anymore is, you know, when I was a high school assistant, you just sit in the coach's office after practice or after a game and just talking about, hey, this guy, or hey, what could we have done differently here? Or just, you know, those are the conversations where you really grow and you learn. And you think about the time that you've been there, how have your responsibilities changed, if they have at all, since you first got there? Have you gotten more responsibility, different responsibilities? Has your role shifted in any way? Just talk a little bit about the evolution of your position there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think coming in, it was an awesome opportunity as a younger coach, working with a first-year head coach, with Coach Martin, and being able to help build a program from the ground up, right? Like the school is an awesome, is in an awesome location. It has other very, very successful athletics programs, and the school was set up to be successful. And, you know, I think that's a key thing in jobs and everything, is the type of resources or whatever the case is. Like it was really cool, and it's been awesome over 6 years to see, you know, our Duhok commitment and our values and things, you know, that we talked about in meeting number one, you know, as a staff, and, you know, sitting down at a Starbucks in the Chicagoland area and talking recruiting with him, and just seeing the evolution and the development of a program from day one. And I've been blessed, you know, for him to give me, you know, different jobs over the course, and whether that's, you know, in charge of recruiting or the recruiting coordinator, you know, that's kind of the role that I was able to take on from day one, of, you know, the database and the contacts and, hey coach, you should, you know, go see this guy, or we need to see this guy, or this is where we're at with that, or whatever the case is, and developing that, along with, you know, the strength and conditioning, and along with, you know, game planning and scouts and everything. And I think, you know, Over the course of 6 years, any good, and I'm not saying I'm good whatsoever, there are many, many better assistant coaches than I am, but any good assistant, no matter what job you're in, you start to learn your head coach, and you start to learn, you know, I know what coach wants to see, right? To an extent. I know, you know, the type of things that, you know, he's going to be like, no, I don't like that, or I like this, or you should put it here. Hey, what font is that? Like, it's crazy, right?
No, like, that makes sense.
The attention to detail totally is key. Like, you know, and I over 6 years, you learn those tendencies. And I think you develop trust. And, you know, if I keep turning in a scouting report that's in Times New Roman, and I do that for 6 years, and coach is like, no, change the font to this. Like, this is what the font needs to be. And, you know, if I'm not doing that, I'm not doing my job. I'm not learning and growing and being like, I'm not making his job easier. And I think that's where, you know, I've been able to adapt as well, and being like, okay, he needs this. Okay, I'm going to give that to him. Or he needs this, or he wants this. Okay, I'm going to do that. And I think that's what develops that trust, that then he says, okay, now, okay, you did that scouting report. I trust you 100%. Let's go with that game plan. You know, I think early on, you know, no matter, you know, what the relationship is, like, maybe you might be a little bit weary of a, you know, this decision or that decision, or he thinks this or he thinks that. But, you know, when you can prove your intentions are pure and your values are right, you know, I think that's key in developing that trust, and him, you know, believing in me that at the end of the day, my heart is for our program to be successful, for him as a head coach to be successful. That's my end goal. It's not, I want to be the best assistant coach. No, it's like, I want this program to be awesome. Like that's all I care about. I care about the guys in the program. I care about Coach Martin and his family. And I think that's a key factor in what he's allowed me to grow and develop as an assistant coach.
So if you were to give advice, let's say you're talking to somebody who was in your position from 7, 8, 9 years ago when you're first starting out your career. And right now, if you could tell somebody what's the key or keys to being a successful assistant coach, you kind of just told the story, but maybe put them into one or two key bullet points that you think, hey, if you want to be a great assistant coach, these are the things that you need to do. And I could probably guess what they are based off what you just said, but yeah. I'm curious just to have you kind of lay them out.
Yeah. I would say the first one is, and I told Coach on the interview, and I remember, and I tell him this often, is he said, is, you know, we're getting ready to finalize the conversation, and I was getting ready to walk out of the office. He said, is there anything else you want to say? And I say, Coach, I said, I can promise you every day I'm going to be loyal and I'm going to have energy. Those two things. I might not be the best person to make a scouting report. I might not be the best individual workout person, but I can promise you I will be 100% loyal to you as a head coach, and I will bring 100% energy every day. And that's something that is a value to me, right? And I think that's key in a younger coach or whoever in this profession. Like, if you can be loyal, and that comes back to when you know who you are, you don't have to worry anymore. You know what your values are. You know what your head coach value, and you can have energy. I think that sets you apart. I think if you can build that type of relationship with people and you're, you know, true to that, you're true to your values, I think that is a lost trait almost in today's society, is that loyalty and that energy for a common purpose. I think that's key.
Let's dive into that loyalty piece, because I think one of the things, and I've said this once or twice on the podcast, but when I was an assistant coach, I worked for the same head coach at the high school level for, I don't know, 12, 13 years. And many years after that, he came to me and we were having a conversation. He said, the one thing that I always knew is that you had my back no matter what, and you were completely loyal. And I don't think I've ever gotten a compliment that made me feel better about what I had done in any walk of life, probably, than that one. It was more meaningful than just about anything I've ever heard. But a lot of times we hear that word loyalty tossed around. We say, oh yeah, we got to be, you know, coaches, assistant coaches need to be loyal. What does that mean in your mind when you hear that word? What does that entail?
Yeah, I think the brunt of that, and when I say I'm loyal to him and I'm loyal to this program, is like, I'm all in. Like, every decision, you know, the fact that, you know, I know what I'm eating every single day, or I know that I need to get a good night's sleep, or I know what I'm telling this recruit. Every decision that I make is for the program and for coach, and to move in the direction moving forward. You know, am I going to agree with every decision that is made? No, but that doesn't mean I need to badmouth him behind his back, kind of like what you're talking about. Like, I respect him. At the end of the day, you know, he's going to make that final decision. But I think the words that I use, or the choices that I make, that's going to align with, okay, are you truly loyal or not? Like, are you, you know, doing this behind my back? Are you, you know, what are you telling the guys? You know, do you, you know, coach got on me at practice, and the guys, you know, texting you later that night, like what are you saying? Like, are you agreeing with the player? Are you agreeing with coach? Or are you saying coach was wrong, or whatever the case is? Like, whose side? And I'm not saying you have to pick a side, but, like, you know, you have to know the intent of your head coach's heart, and you have to know what the meaning behind his decision was, and you have to be all in on that. And, you know, it's just like any relationship, whether it's marriage, whether it's a head coach, assistant coach, whether it's a, you know, you know, boss at another job, like, you have to know that the intent of his heart was pure, right? That he made the decision based on the facts that he had and the feelings that he had and the experiences that he had. And you have to go all in with it. And you have to trust that he made that decision because he thought that's what the program needed. And I thought that was a big thing when it comes to developing loyalty over the course of, you know, each and every day.
That's a really good answer. And I think when people would ask me about that, I would always come at it in a similar fashion, in that I kind of looked at it where there might be a disagreement behind closed doors. I might be able to have a conversation with my head coach and say, I don't know if I think of this, or maybe we should try that. But ultimately, as you said, the head coach is the decision maker, and they make the decision that is best for the program in their mind at that given moment. And then my job as an assistant coach is, as soon as I walk out of that coach's office, that decision was not only my head coach's, but that decision was my decision. And anybody who asks me about that decision, whether it's a coach from another school, whether it's a player, whether it's a parent, whether it's an administrator, I'm 100% supportive and behind that decision. Yeah. I'm not like, well, I wouldn't have done that. That was really, I don't know what he was thinking there.
Yeah.
And then I think the last piece of it too is, and I've never coached in the college level, so I don't know how prevalent this is or isn't, but you hear stories a lot on the high school level that, because you don't have as much control in a lot of cases in your high school over who's on your staff, whether that's, you know, sometimes you might be able to get one person in as your varsity assistant, but, you know, the JV coach may be this person, or maybe you got somebody from outside the building that's a freshman coach. And I've heard way too many stories of coaches that, you know, somebody gets hired as the ninth grade coach and suddenly they're bad mouthing the head coach to parents, and they start angling for the job. And so I always looked at loyalty in addition to what we just talked about was, I'm not trying to get your job. And nobody's ever going to think that that's what I'm trying to do. You will never hear any whispers of, hey, Mike's trying to go after that job. You know, he's just waiting for this guy to make a mistake or whatever. Or, man, he's not doing a good job. I should be the guy. I could do so much better. Or telling parents and those kinds of things. And it's just, I think loyalty, people on the outside hear it and they don't always understand it. I think you did a really good job of clarifying for people what that means and how important it is. I think it's so important to you as an assistant coach. And I just think the value that provides to a head coach, you can't even put it into words.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from the outside in, and we hit on this earlier, and the voices that people hear and, you know, the comparison and, you know, For our personalities in our program specifically here at Loras, like we're very, you know, energetic. We're very outspoken. We're very just like, let's get it, right? And from the outside, we probably at times will rub people the wrong way, right? Because whether it's Coach Martin, whether it's me, or whether it's our players on the floor, like we'll rub people the wrong way. And I think that's okay in, you know, athletics. Like if you're always doing something, you know, if everybody always likes you, right, there's that quote, like then you don't stand for anything, right?
Well,
you know, and I think that goes back to loyalty, is like, in if coach rubs somebody the wrong way for our program because he's standing up or he's being who he is, like I know what the intent was. I know why he did that. I know why he's, you know, clapping and getting excited on the sideline. I know why he's standing up for our guys. I know why, because of the decisions that he's doing in the office day in and day out, and the voices and the people on the outside don't see that. And I think that comes back to the loyalty, is like, I've got your back, coach. Like, let's go. Like, I know why we're doing this. I know who we are. I know why we're doing that. And that's the most important part of it all of it.
And I think another thing that kind of goes along with that is, like, our program may not be for you. You know what I mean? I think there's something to be said for that when you think about whether it's business or you're listening to podcasts or you read about, hey, you know, you may not like this particular thing. Well, guess what? It wasn't made for you. It's made for the people who are in our building every day, who are on our practice floor. That's who we're here for. And we can't really make everybody else happy. And I think I had a coach one time tell me a long time ago that you got to make decisions where when you go to bed at night, you can put your head down on the pillow and know that you made the right decision for you, for your team, for your players. And you can't worry about the outside influences, because if you do, you're never going to make anyone else happy. You're never going to make everyone happy. So if you try to make everyone happy, you're just going to be unhappy. So make a decision that you know is the right one, that you can be happy with, that when you go and lay down at night and put your head on the pillow, that you can live with it. I think there's something to be said for that. It's hard to do sometimes. It's hard not to want to please everybody. But ultimately, I think the people who are the most successful are the ones who believe in their vision and believe in what they're doing. And then they go forward with that, and they don't let the outside influences affect the decisions that they're making, because they've put together, as you said, they've planned, they understand the why behind the decisions that they're making. And that's ultimately, I think, how you have success.
Yeah, that's good. That'll preach right there, brother. That's good.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, I want to wrap up. We're getting it's almost 11:30 your time. I know you want to get a good night's sleep and you want to get up and get your coffee going tomorrow. So I want to give you one more final two-part question. When you think about the next year or two, what's the biggest challenge that you have in front of you? And then number two, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy about getting up in the morning and going into your office there at Loras?
Yeah, I think those are two really, really good questions. And kind of the first part, the biggest challenge, and I think this is for coaches or for anybody, is eliminating distractions, right? Like, I think we're in a crucial part of society and athletics or whatever the case is, that there are so many things out there that's trying to get our attention. Like, they're digging into us and they're pinging us on our phone and they're emailing us or whatever the case is. Like, they are trying to distract us. And everything that I'm reading and learning and digging into right now is, how do you eliminate those things? And I think that's a challenge, right? Whether it's putting a time limit on certain apps on your phone, or, you know, blocking this website, or, you know, turning your phone off at, you know, this certain time at the day or whatever the case is. I think that's a challenge. And I think that's, you know, comes back to who you are and why you do what you do, is, can you eliminate the unnecessary things in your life? And when you can eliminate those things and you can focus on, you know, two or three things, like, you can set yourself up for success. And I think that's key. And kind of going into part two about, you know, what that was,
the biggest joy
each and every day is, one, waking up and seeing my two boys. That's a joy, and having them, you know, running around the gym and everything. But showing up every day at Loras, it's like day one over and over again. Like, I get excited, you know. Yeah, maybe we lose this game, but to show up the next day and to say, hey, what do we need to do to get better today? And I think that's a key component to who I am as an individual, but also who our program is, and the opportunity to work with Coach Martin, and just Loras, you know, administration from the top down, is how can we get better? What can we do to serve our players? What can we do to serve the community? What can we do to serve this program to get to where we want to be, not just today, but tomorrow, and to set it up for sustainability over the course of the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, whoever knows how long. But doing it day in and day out, I think that's a joy. And when you have a firm foundation for who you are and why you do what you do, you know, going into work early and staying in late, that's a choice, and that's an easy choice to make when you know who you are.
Getting to success is hard, and maintaining success is even harder. And I think that what you just described fits that bill perfectly. Yeah. That you got to keep putting in the work every single day to get you to where you want to go. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share, how can people reach out to you? How can they find out more about what you guys are doing at Loras? You want to share social media, email, whatever you want to put out there. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap it up.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm not huge on social media. I'm on Twitter at Coach Gabe Miller. I'm on there a little bit. You can follow us on Loras Men's Basketball social media at Duhawk MBB. You can find all of our contact information on our website as well. But yeah, shoot me a DM or cell phone is 812-374-7558. If anybody wants to call or text, talk, whatever, would love to chat and build a relationship.
Gabe, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule, for staying up late with me tonight. Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun to dive into a lot of different topics with you tonight. Yeah. We got into some parenting stuff.
Love and it.
I always love getting into some of the entrepreneurial and habit type stuff that I like to listen to when I'm not listening to the basketball podcast. So that was a lot of fun for me. Again, really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.